Supervised the kitchen. Duryodhana looked after the treasury, while Sahadeva respectfully greeted the arriving guests. Nakula procured needed items. Arjuna attended the respectable elders, and Krishna washed everyone's feet, while Draupadi served food and generous Karna gave out the gifts. Many others, such as Yuyudhan, Vikarna, Hardikya, Vidura, Buddhisrava, and other sons of Bahivika and Santardana, similarly volunteered for various duties during the elaborate sacrifice. They did so because of their eagerness to please Maharaj Yudhisthira, O best of kings. This much Prabhupada mentions in this verse that Krishna washed everybody's feet because those who had pride could not do it. After the priests, the prominent delegates, the great learned saints, and the king's most intimate well-wishers had all been properly honoured with pleasing words, auspicious offerings, and various gifts as remuneration, and after the king of Chedi had entered the lotus feet of the lord of the Satpatas, the Avavritta bath was performed in the divine river Jamuna. Purport: the gifts offered to the distinguished guests included valuable jewellery.
I mentioned here.
Chaye chasat vata pates charanam pavishte. After the king of Chedi had entered the lotus feet of the lord of the Satpatas, after the demise of... Who's the king of Chedi? Who knows who the king of Chedi is? Shishupal. Yes. Right. Avabhrita bhav signifies the end of the Jagya, from what I can understand. Text 9. During the Avabhrita celebration, the music of many kinds of instruments resounded, including mridangas, conch shells, panavas, dundhuris, kettle drums, and gomukha horns. Female dancers danced with great joy, and choruses sang while the loud vibrations of Venus flutes and hand cymbals reached all the way to the heavenly regions. This is a real party. All the kings, wearing gold necklaces, then set off for the Jamuna. They had flags and banners of various colours, and were accompanied by infantrymen and well-adorned soldiers riding lordly elephants, chariots, and horses. Now, what is all this in response to? This particular narrative that we've got here. Does anybody know? I'd like to say, what is this in response to? This narrative, this description of the Rajasuya sacrifice. Someone usually. Bhagavatam's usually a response to a question. Which question? And who asked the question? Parikshit Maharaj, yes, he's asking the question. What was the question?
Why Duryodhana so religious?
Yes, why was Duryodhana unhappy? That was why he was unhappy, because he was envious. The massed armies of the Yadus, Srinjayas, Kambojas, Cambodia. Is that Cambodia? Cambodia? Sounds interesting. Kuru, Kekayas, and Kosalas made the earth tremble as they followed Yudhisthira Maharaj, the performer of the sacrifice, in procession. The assembly officials, the priests, and other excellent brahmanas resoundingly vibrated by Vedic mantras, while the demigods, divine sages, pitas, and gandharvas sang praises and rained down flowers. Men and women, all adorned with sandalwood paste, flower garlands, jewellery, and fine clothing, sported by smearing and sprinkling one another with various liquids. Here we go to soccer. Here's a different sport. The men smeared the courtesans with plentiful oil, yogurt, perfumed water, turmeric, and kumkum powder, and the courtesans playfully smeared the men with the same substances. So basically they had a water fight. If you go to Vrindavan in the days preceding Guru Purnima, then everybody's playing holy. Vrashana especially. But even in Mayapur, also in Bengal, they do the same thing. So it's still a...
You didn't hear about the yatra?
Here I'm not the yatra.
Really?
I didn't notice. Oh, okay. Pretty lame attempt.
Oh. Many ways to come.
Sura Bhava describes this scene as follows. The men and women of Indraprastha, their bodies smeared with scents and flower oils, were nicely dressed in colourful garments and decorated with garlands, jewels, and ornaments. They were all enjoying the ceremony, and they threw on each other liquid substances like water, oil, milk, butter, and yogurt. Some even smeared these on each other's bodies. In this way, they were enjoying the occasion. The professional prostitutes were also engaged by jubilantly smearing these liquid substances on the bodies of the men, and the men reciprocated in the same way. All the liquid substances had been mixed with turmeric and saffron, and their colour was a lustrous yellow. Surrounded by guards, King Yudhishthira's queens came out on their chariots to see the fun, just as the demigods' wives appeared in the sky in celestial aeroplanes. As maternal cousins and intimate friends sprinkled the queens with liquids, the ladies' faces bloomed with shy smiles, enhancing the queen's splendid beauty. Therefore, the maternal cousins referred here are Lord Krishna and such brothers as of his as Gada and Sharana, and the friends mentioned are such persons as Bhima and Arjuna. As the queens squirted water from syringes at their brothers-in-law and other male companions, their own garments became drenched, revealing their arms, breasts, thighs and waists. In their excitement, the flowers fell from their loosened braids. By these charming pastimes, they agitated those with contaminated consciousness. Purport. So the Prabhupada writes, such behaviour between pure males and females is enjoyable, but persons who are materially contaminated become lustful. The emperor mounted upon his chariot, drawn by excellent horses wearing golden collars, appeared splendid in the company of his wives, just like the brilliant Rajasuya sacrifice surrounded by its various rituals. Purport. King Yudhishthira and his queens appeared like the personified Rajasuya sacrifice surrounded by its beautiful rituals. The priests led the king through the execution of the final rituals of Patni, Samyaja and Avabhitya. Then they had him and Queen Draupadi sip water for purification and bathe in the Ganges. The kettle drums of the gods resounded, along with those of human beings, demigods, sages, forefathers and humans, all poured down showers of flowers. All the citizens belonging to the various orders of Varna and Ashrama then bathed in that place, where even the most grievous sinner can immediately be freed from all sinful reactions. This is the Jamuna. Next, the king put on new silken garments and adorned himself with fine jewellery. He then honoured the priests, assembly officials, learned brahmanas and other guests by presenting them with ornaments and clothing. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, the king not only dressed himself and decorated himself, but he also gave clothing and ornaments to all the priests and to the others who had participated in the yajnas. In this way, he worshipped them all. In various ways, King Yudhishthira, who had totally dedicated his life to Lord Narayana, continuously honoured his relatives, his immediate family, the other kings, his friends and well-wishers, and all others present as well. All the men there shone like demigods. They were adorned with jewelled earrings, flower garlands, turbans, waistcoats, silk dhotis, and valuable pearl necklaces. The lovely faces of the women were beautified by their matched earrings and locks of hair, and they all wore golden belts. Then the highly cultured priests, the great Vedic authorities who had served as sacrificial witnesses, the specially invited kings, the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, demigods, sages, forefathers, and mystic spirits, and the chief planetary rulers and their followers, all of them having been worshipped by King Yudhishthira, took his permission and departed, O King, each for his own abode. As they all glorified the wonderful Rajasuya Yajna, performed by that great saintly king and servant of Lord Hari, they were not satiated, just as an ordinary man is never satiated when drinking nectar. At that time, Raja Yudhishthira stopped a number of his friends, immediate family members, and other relatives from departing, among them Lord Krishna. Out of love, Yudhishthira could not let them go, for he felt the pain of imminent separation. My dear Parikshit, the Supreme Lord remained there for some time to please the king. after first sending Samba and the other Yadu heroes back to Dwarka. So this is all taking place in Hastinapur. Thus King Yudhishthira, the son of Dharma, was at last relieved of his burning ambition, having by the grace of Lord Krishna successfully crossed the vast and formidable ocean of his desires. Anybody got any desires? A couple. Right. Purport. The previous chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam clearly explain that King Yudhishthira intensely desired to demonstrate to the world the supremacy of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the blessings received by those who surrendered to him. To do this, King Yudhishthira performed the Rajasuya sacrifice, a very difficult task. So Prabhupada writes in this connection, in the material world, everyone has a particular type of desire to be fulfilled, but one is never able to fulfill his desires to his full satisfaction. But King Yudhishthira, because of his unflinching devotion to Krishna, could fulfill all his desires successfully by the performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice. From the description of the Rajasuya Yajna, it appears that such a function is a great ocean of opulent desires. It is not possible for an ordinary man to cross over such an ocean. Nevertheless, by the grace of Lord Krishna, King Yudhishthira was able to cross over it very easily, and thus he became free of all anxieties. Translation. One day Duryodhana, while observing the riches of King Yudhishthira's palace, felt greatly disturbed by the magnificence of both the Rajasuya sacrifice and his performer, the king, whose life and soul was Lord Achyuta. In that palace, all the collected opulences of the kings of men, demons and gods were brilliantly manifest. Having been brought there by the cosmic inventor, Maya Dhanava. With those riches, Draupadi served her husbands, and Duryodhana, the prince of the Kuras, lamented because he was very much attracted to her. This is the seed of the Battle of Kurukshetra, the bead, if you like, the beginning. Lord Madhupati's thousands of queens were also staying in the palace. Their feet moved slowly, weighed down by their hips, and the bells on their feet tinkled charmingly. Their waists were very slender. The kumkum from their breasts reddened their pearl necklaces, and their swaying earrings and flowing locks of hair enhanced the exquisite beauty of their faces. Srila Prabhupada writes, after looking at such beauties in the palace of King Yudhishthira, Duryodhana became envious. He became especially envious and lustful upon seeing the beauty of Draupadi, because he had cherished a special attraction for her from the very beginning of her marriage with the Pandavas. In the marriage selection assembly of Draupadi, Duryodhana had also been present, and with other princes he had been very much captivated by the beauty of Draupadi, but he had failed to achieve her. Translation, so happened that Emperor Yudhishthira, the son of Dharma, was sitting, just like Indra, on a golden throne in the assembly hall built by Maya Dhanava. Present with him were his attendants and family members, and also Lord Krishna, his special eye. Displaying the opulences of Brahma himself, King Yudhishthira was being praised by the court poets. Therefore, so Sridhar Swami explains that Lord Krishna is described here as Yudhishthira's special eye, since he advised the king on what was beneficial and what was not. So, private eye. Svachakshusha, his eye. His own eye. In other words, Krishna looked out for the Pandavas. He had an eye out for the Pandavas. He also had his eye on Duryodhana for that matter. proud Duryodhana holding a sword in his hand and wearing a crown and necklace, angrily went into the palace in the company of his brothers, O king, insulting the doorkeepers as he entered. Purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, Duryodhana was always in an envious and angry mood, and therefore on a slight provocation he spoke sharply to the doorkeepers and became angry. Now, this is a very interesting. Bewildered by the illusions created through Maya Dhanada's magic, Duryodhana mistook the solid floor for water and lifted the end of his garment. And elsewhere he fell into the water, mistaking it for the solid floor. This Nachakrabati Thakur mentions that this dwelling built by Maya Dhanada was meant to expose impure persons like Duryodhana. For everybody else to have a pure heart, and these illusions were not present. But for envious persons like Duryodhana, then it created difficulties for them. The house itself created difficulties for people with an impure consciousness. It's interesting to note how this scene has been set, because it's interesting to note that it's mentioned that Duryodhana snapped at the, you know, like, out of my way, you know, a bit like, you know, there was that character, Terry, what was his name, Terry, oh, I've forgotten what his name was, he always used to play the part of he used to play the part of the villain in when I was a kid. Anyway, I used to watch him. You know, those magnificent men in their flying machines. He was the evil guy. He wanted to Terry Collins. That's right. He always played the evil. And there would be, you'd always see these scenes in the movie where he'd be entering into a house and the servant would be there and he'd pushing him off the side. So setting the scene is showing how Duryodhana is an uncomfortable character. Angry, agitated, upset. In fact, it's not mentioned in here, but in the commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, it's mentioned that Duryodhana was one of those people who was agitated by the exchanges between the men and the women in the water fight, if you like, in the when they were playing holi. And Duryodhana, as mentioned, he was one of the people who was agitated and disturbed. Whereas those who had a pure heart, those who were pure hearted, were not disturbed by that, those exchanges between the men and the women in the playing of the games, the fun, if you like. And here again, Duryodhana is being bewildered because of that mentality. And as mentioned later on, it's explained. Or it's revealed here. So we gradually, we're seeing the character of Duryodhana is being exposed, if you like. Interesting to know, he was also the keeper of the treasury, so he was looking after the money. Right? So a picture is being painted for us, a scene, if you like. And you see this sometimes in the movies, you know, a person who's a nasty character, producer of the movie, interesting how they'll do this. They'll do things like, they'll make the villain, when we look at things, certainly in our culture anyway, we naturally look at things from left to right, for example. Our natural, when we read a book, then we read it from left to right. So the natural motion is to go from left to right, or things go in a clockwise fashion. If you want to disturb people and create a disturbing influence on people's minds. And people who make movies, they understand these principles. So what they do is they have the villain walk in the opposite direction. So instead of coming from left to right, he'll be walking from right to left. And that just creates a natural feeling of discomfort in the viewer. Because the natural thing is to look from left to right, or from left up. You know, everybody likes to see the financial figures go from the bottom up. So it's increased. Always from left to right. It's a design. So principles of design, basically. So here we're seeing in the pages of the Bhagavatam how the description of Duryodhana is revealing his character. He's an evil, he's disturbed, he's an evil person. And Sukadeva Goswami is painting this picture of the character of Duryodhana. Now, what happened when Duryodhana fell into the water? Well, my dear King Parikshit, Bhima laughed to see this, because Bhima was the avowed enemy. Although that comes out later. And so did the women, kings and others. King Yudhisthira tried to stop them. Because, you know, King Yudhisthira, Maharaj Yudhisthira was a thorough gentleman. Didn't want to see anybody humiliated. You know, he could feel the sufferings of others. Even if he wasn't suffering himself, he could feel them. It's a qualification of the devotee, is that they feel for the suffering of others. So they don't want to see anybody sit up for some discomfort, even a person like Duryodhana. So King Yudhisthira tried to stop them. No, this is not appropriate. Don't laugh at him, you get upset. But Lord Krishna showed his approval. So King Yudhisthira tried to stop them, and Krishna, with his eyebrows, he's encouraging everybody to laugh. But this is just a simple little thing. It's just a simple little thing when you think about it, but so significant of the course of history. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti mentions that King Yudhisthira tried to check the laughter by glancing at the women and Bhima. Lord Krishna, however, gave approval with a gesture of his eyebrows. You know, he was laughing. The Lord had come to the earth to remove the burden of wicked kings. And this incident was not unrelated to the Lord's purpose. What was the result? Humiliated and burning with anger. He was already disturbed when he came in, but now he was super agitated. Duryodhana turned his face down, left without uttering a word, and went back to Hastinapur. The saintly persons present loudly cried out, "Alas, alas!" Ha ha iti! Alas, alas! And King Yudhisthira was somewhat saddened. But the Supreme Lord, whose mere glance had bewildered Duryodhana, remained silent, for his intention was to remove the burden of the earth. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada writes, when Duryodhana left in such an angry mood, everyone regretted the incident, and King Yudhisthira also became very sorry. But, despite all occurrences, Krishna was silent. He did not say anything against or in favour of the incident. It appeared that Duryodhana had been put into illusion by the supreme will of Lord Krishna, and this was the beginning of the enmity between the two sects of the Kuru dynasty. This appeared to be a part of Krishna's plan in his mission to decrease the burden of the world. Last verse. I have now replied to your questions, your question, O King, concerning why Duryodhana was dissatisfied on the occasion of the great Rajasuya sacrifice. Thus end the purport of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 75th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Duryodhana Humiliated. Om Ajnana Timinanda Syaganam Janashara Akaratam Shulamitam Janatasmayam Shri Guruvay Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Dina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharapke Swabhatam Tikam Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Hangu Plankaya Jekarin Yatkripa Tamaham Mandri Shri Jekarin. So we can see that the seed of envy, or the seed of material desire basically, and how that seed of desire in Duryodhana burned, if you like a fire. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that lust actually burns like fire, right? Lust burns like fire, and no matter how much fuel you put into the fire, actually you can't satisfy it. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, by Krishna's grace, by Krishna's mercy, he was in a position where he was able to satisfy his desires. Fully satisfy his desires. It's mentioned here, that verse mentioned. You know, a man's or a woman's desires in life are like an insurmountable ocean. Because, you know, each one of us has desires, but as soon as you satisfy one of them, then there's another 5 or 6 or 10 pop up. So, Duryodhana, he more or less had the same desire. He wanted Draupadi, he wanted the kingdom. You know, Dhritarashtra was the elder son. Out of him and Pandu. But Dhritarashtra was blind. So therefore he couldn't have the throne. Ordinarily he would have the throne, but he was born blind. So that was a disqualification. So the kingdom, by the laws of inheritance, by the laws of managing the kingdom according to the Kshatriya code, then that meant that the younger son then would become the king. But Pandu died early, so that meant then that the Pandavas, Yudhisthira and his brothers, were under the protection of Dhritarashtra and the other family members. Actually, the kingdom belonged to the kingdom. Prabhupada explains actually the kingdom belonged to Bhishmadeva. But because Bhishmadeva took the vow of a brahmachari, then he handed the kingdom on to his nephews. They were the next in line. So then the Pandavas, because Dhritarashtra was blind and he couldn't be the king, then Pandu became the king. Pandu died, then that meant the rightful heirs, the Pandavas, Yudhisthira and Bhima and Arjuna, Nakula Sahadeva, they were the rightful heirs according to this principle, the principles of succession. But they were then under the protection of Dhritarashtra, because they were very young. They were then under the protection of Dhritarashtra and the other elders until they grew up. So it was almost like Dhritarashtra and his family were again in charge. So then Dhritarashtra was thinking, I should have been the king. Why can't my sons, who would ordinarily have inherited the throne, why can't they have the kingdom? Dhritarashtra was thinking like that. Of course, Duryodhana was thinking like that as well. So, They were envious. And here, Duryodhana was envious of Maharaj Yudhishthira's opulence, of his influence, of his wealth. At this stage, he had the whole world at his feet. And that's described here, the opulent situation, the wealth. Because Maharaj Yudhishthira, as we can see here, even though Maharaj Yudhishthira had all of this opportunity, we see in the Rajasuri sacrifice, what's he doing? He's just giving it away to all of his friends. Like, his motivation for gathering all of this wealth was not to demonstrate his own prowess, if you like, but rather he wanted to demonstrate the benefits of being a devotee. Because, you know, ordinarily the devotees are fairly impoverished. Maharaj just didn't like this. Oh, people won't be attracted to Krishna if his devotees are always broke, always at war. So he wanted to demonstrate by being a devotee you can be wealthy, you can be famous, you can be influential and powerful by Krishna's grace. And so, you know, the whole purpose of the, in his mind, the Rajasuri sacrifice was not to demonstrate his personality, but rather to demonstrate, just see how wonderful Krishna is, and see how merciful Krishna is to these devotees, because the devotees will have their desires satisfied by the Lord. But of course that upset Duryodhana, because how come him and not me? This is envy. Prabhupada explains, this is envy. Envy means you've got it, it's rightfully yours, but I don't want you to have it. I want it. There's envy. The good Prabhupada makes the point that there is no place for envy in the spiritual realm. Not this kind of envy where you want to pull somebody else down to promote yourself. Is very bad. In the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explained, Dharma Prajita Kaitavatra, that cheating is kicked out in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Religious practice, materially motivated religious practice, is kicked out. It is not a, there's not a place for that type of mentality in bhakti. Bhakti is pure. And you can see that in the character of Maharaj Yudhishthira, he's serving Krishna and he's also serving all of the devotees. And it's interesting, he didn't want to upset Duryodhana. He understood what a character he was. But of course, Krishna didn't mind that Duryodhana was upset, because he understood his nature, and in any case, that's what he was like. And that was his disqualification. That he was envious meant that he was selfish. And being selfish meant that as a ruler, he couldn't actually act for the benefit of the citizens. The real duty of the Kshatriya is to act for the benefit of everybody. This is the nature of a devotee also, and a truly beneficent Kshatriya. Not like in this day and age, you know, the administrators get themselves into a position where they can exploit the wealth of the nation or the state, and then, you know, plunder it basically for themselves. At the expense of the citizens. Whereas the duty of the Kshatriya is to take the taxes, but then distribute them liberally. That's the idea. You have, in one sense, you know, living in Australia, we have high taxes. We have to pay high taxes. Huh?
Anybody here who thinks they're paying too much tax? Yeah, we're paying too much tax. But, by the same token, if you look at the facilities that we have, and compare those to the facilities in other places, then we're not doing too badly, when you think about it. School system, the roads are okay, we have water, well, we've got pipes for water, we don't have any water in them, that's kind of thing. But according even then, to the duty of the Kshatriyas, the duty of the Kshatriyas is to see that the citizens are behaving properly and pious enough to ensure that even the course of universal affairs is running properly, so that there's rain and other natural facilities are being provided. So that's the duty of the Kshatriya. And that's why Krishna wanted the Pandavas on the throne and not Duryodhana and his cronies, if you like, Dhritarashtra and the others. Because their mood was not to serve, but their mood was to exploit. And of course that's the real problem for the living entity. You know, we're viewing the world with an eye for enjoying it for ourselves. But a devotee doesn't look in that way at the creation. The devotee looks at the creation and understands who's in charge. Rishikesh, the controller of everyone and everything, is Rishikesh. That's the manifestation of the Lord as the Paramatma. So they see the position or the supremacy of God, if you like, and they understand that everything is meant to be used in His service. It all belongs to Him in any case. It's an illusion to think that it belongs to us. How long do we have those facilities for in any case? We can be very, very powerful at one moment, then in another moment, you know, we can't even speak or remember our name. You know, I was talking to a gentleman yesterday who is aging, and he was quite a well-known social commentator in Australia, wrote books, and he wrote a book called A Commentary on Australian Culture, called The Land of the Long Weekend. We like our holidays. We don't like to work, you know, just treat it right, take it easy. But, and he assisted us in a number of occasions. And, but now he's must be in his 80s. And he's got Parkinson's disease, so, you know, he said, some days I'm good, some days I'm not good. And, you know, with that disease, then you have no control over your nervous and muscular system. So you lose your ability to talk. So, you know, one minute you're a very powerful, influential, intellectual, with a sharp wit, and then the next, it's only a matter of time, you've lost everything by the desire, by the will of, by providence, if you like, by time. So ultimately, you know, Krishna demonstrates who's in charge and who owns everything by the influence of time. And yet we're thinking, I'm in control, I'm in charge, it belongs to me. This is the illusion, it's illusion. Whereas God is, and that's the mentality of Duryodhana. Or if it doesn't belong to me, and this is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, he is my enemy and I will destroy him, basically. This is the mentality of the demons. I'll destroy him and I'll take what's rightfully mine from him. Although actually, in this case, the opulence, the influence, the position was rightfully Maharaj Yudhisthira's. And this is the nature of envy. But Duryodhana could not tolerate to see the Pandavas in that position of prominence. Couldn't tolerate it. And Krishna didn't mind then that Maharaj, that Duryodhana was humiliated. Didn't mind. Because it was his plan. Vinashaya cha duskritam. To destroy the duskrita, or the demons. Those who are envious of others. And those kshatriyas who were misusing their position and exploiting the citizens, exploiting the earth. And Krishna doesn't like to see that, especially in the devotees. He doesn't like to see that enviousness. Therefore, it's recommended that the devotees, serve each other as a display of non-enviousness. Or if there is an envy, to remove that enviousness from the heart. So you see here, and it's interesting, Krishna's example. You know, he's washing the feet of everybody that's come. Now, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's the one who should be glorified and praised, and whose feet should be bathed. But he's showing by example how to serve, if you like, taking on the most humble position, most menial position. So Krishna's teaching by example, actually. Rather than expecting a prominent position, because obviously Krishna already had been worshipped at the beginning of the sacrifice. He's been worshipped as the topmost, as the most worthy person. And we see that also when Narada Muni came to visit the Lord in Dwarka, Krishna immediately wanted to worship him. So it's not like Krishna is thinking, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead and you guys should all be worshipping me. Although that's a fact. But still, he wanted to demonstrate, actually, we should be prepared to serve each other. And then that removes this mood of enviousness. So it's Krishna's plan, ultimately, that Duryodhana and the others, Jarasandha, many, these kings, would ultimately be destroyed. The friends of Duryodhana, the followers, the backers of Duryodhana. And this is the help to explain that situation. Duryodhana wanted Draupadi. But he couldn't have it. And it's interesting how, by cheating, gambling and so forth, he managed to capture Draupadi later on. Because that was a big mistake. Actually, it was all a bit of a mistake. I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Anything else? Yes, good.
during the fighting, that one Arjuna went to Duryodhana, and he asked for the 5 Pandava arrows.
Yeah.
The 5 arrows that he meant to give him the Pandavas.
Yeah.
Chakriya code. He upheld the Chakriya code, which is to be generous, giving charity when you're asked. There are certain principles that a Chakriya must uphold, so he upheld those principles. So he owed them a favour. So they went and cashed in at that time. Yeah. There you go. Complicated. Not complicated. Many details in the story. Yes. Yeah, it's a sign of humility and submission and lacking in pride. So even though he's the leader, he demonstrates, I'm still your servant. As the leader, still the king is meant to be the servant of the citizens. It's a particular kind of service where he gets to be the boss, but still he's a servant nevertheless. There's a great lesson in that. That the leader doesn't think that you're here to serve me. He should think, you're here to serve Krishna, I'm here to serve you. And we're all serving Krishna together. That's the characteristic of somebody like Maharaj Yudhisthira. So, a leader may be in a position where he's able to order others or direct others, but that direction is meant for the benefit of everybody. When the Kshatriyas are directing for the benefit of themselves, then you have a problem. So, you know, when the guru is accepting worship, thinking, yes, this is all for me, then he's in trouble. Prabhupada gives the example that, when he was asked why, in Melbourne, when he was challenged, you're driving in a Rolls Royce. Prabhupada says, Rolls Royce is a tin can. It's not good enough for the representative of God. And that he was asked about all the devotees bowing down. And Prabhupada said, I'm like a tax collector. I collect obeisances, but they're not meant for me. Just as the tax collector collects the revenue for the king, so I also collect obeisances for the person whom I'm representing, that's Krishna. So the devotees are acting as Krishna's representatives, and they're accepting the worship. The spiritual master is accepting the worship of the disciples as the representative, and he's passing that on to his master, his spiritual master, and ultimately onto Krishna. This is why one has to be very pure-hearted as a leader. We have to be, and in one sense, we're all leaders because we're setting the example for others to follow. As teachers, we're meant to set an example. So that example is that when we're in a position of responsibility or in a leadership position, then we're actually acting as representatives of Krishna, but for the benefit of everybody.
In the character of Duryodhana, his mind is very arrogant.
Arrogant, yes. That's also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita.
And witty. Because he has lost the objectivity.
Yes.
And can we call him that because of his false ego?
Yeah. Tampo, tapo, vimanascha. It's mentioned in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Proud, angry, arrogant, expert in insulting others. It's the nature of a demon.
False ego.
Yeah.
And second thing, mind not mentioned in Bhagavad is that when Duryodhana slipped in that water,
yeah,
Draupadi called him blind.
Under. Yeah. But that's what happens, you see, because by material contamination we do become blind, interestingly enough. We're not able to see things as they are. And that's what happened to Duryodhana. He wasn't able to see things as they are. Whereas it's mentioned here that Yudhishthira Maharaj could see things because Krishna was his eye. Krishna was acting as his eye. He was being directed by Krishna personally. And that's the, you know, the devotees are able to see things correctly because they, first of all, they see things through the eye of the Shastra. But they're also inspired from within by Krishna. Ideally. Because we have to be careful about our inspiration. You know, there are plenty of people who said, God told me to do it. And it was the wrong thing to do. This is why people have a bad view of religion, you know, because there's many crazy guys who said, God told me to do it. Just went and killed, you know, 15 people. I heard a voice, told me to do it. Must have been God. Could have been anybody, but anyway. Anyone or anything. But I think God told me to do it. But actually, you know, the test would be that it's got to be beneficial for everybody. Certainly from the spiritual point of view, it must be beneficial. Alright, I'm going to finish here. Tell me about Srimad Bhagavatam.